The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Welcome to True Crime Garage. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Nick, and with me, as always, is a man who puts his mind to his microphone and to your eardrum. Here is the captain.
Yeah, bang on those eardrums. It's good to be seen and good to see you. Thanks for listening. Thanks for telling a friend.
This week's featured beer is Brooklyn Summer Ale. This summer ale is a refreshing, flavorful pale ale that's not too strong. One could easily sip this all day long, and it's making me miss the summer. But look, spring is closer than we think, so hang in there. Garage grade 4 3/4 bottle caps out of 5, and it's time for the thank yous. First up, a big thank you to Sea Dog in Longmont, Colorado.
And a big We Like Your Drip goes out to Ash in Scottsdale.
Next up, a cheers and thank you to Ann Paul in Annapolis, Maryland. And last but certainly not least, we have Barbo Joy, born in Cleveland, Ohio, but now out in beautiful Denver, Colorado. Everyone we just mentioned, they went to TrueCrimeGarage.com, helped us out with this week's beer run, and for that, we are forever grateful, so thank you.
Yeah, BWERUN, Beer Run. If you're looking for our old off-the-record episodes, you can find them. I've been adding one or two a week on the old YouTube, so go subscribe and like on YouTube. And Colonel, that's enough of the business.
That's right, everybody. Gather around, grab a chair, grab a beer. Let's talk some true crime.
This is one of the most brutal murders in the history of this city. Rashawn's gruesome murder will forever trouble a dedicated detective who retired without solving it. And will haunt Rashawn's mother, who's had to live with it every day.
What you don't want to happen is exactly what happens next. The case goes cold. Rashawn's case went unsolved for years. This despite the repeated airings of the case on America's Most Wanted. Listen, the good, hardworking folks over at AMW, John Walsh and nowadays Callahan Walsh, his son, America's Most Wanted, they aired segments on Rashawn's case in 2005, twice in 2006, once in 2007, and once again in 2008. Police were never able to track down the man who was seen at Rashawn's apartment that day, the man that they suspected was most likely Rashawn's killer. Lieutenant Commander over at NYPD's Brooklyn North Homicide Squad spoke to the NY Daily News in 2008, so this is 3 years after the murder, saying, quote, "We've chased hundreds of leads across the country and we're not closer today than we were in 2005. And it's very hard to say after all this time that there was nothing new. It is a shame that it is a shame, according to this homicide squad detective, that they had nothing new in 2008 compared to where their investigation stood in 2005. So no doubt investigators worked this case hard. When Detective Amato was the lead investigator, he traveled to Texas to go to the factory that made the Rooster duffel bag that we talked so much about in episode one. The goal was to figure out where the limited edition bags were distributed, which is how they learned that they were handed out to MTA employees. According to the Daily News, detectives also traveled to Florida and Colorado chasing down leads as well. And eventually, they resorted to simply blanketing the city, NYC, with flyers featuring Rashawn's unsolved murder, and even going undercover to local gay bars and clubs in search of leads. And then we talked about what they started their investigation with, as detectives speculated, based on the, quote, surgical manner in which Rashawn's murder appears to have been pulled off. They worked that angle, but then knowing that, they started to believe that possibly Rashawn's killer was a serial killer. Because think about this for a second. There's really just no other way to come up with an explanation for why on earth someone would have, and we're basing this off of evidence, off of things and facts that we figured out about this case. There's no other explanation to figure out why someone would abduct and hold Rashawn captive, kill him, cut him up with precision, and then trot around Brooklyn in crowded subway stations and streets, toting body parts in multiple bags, and then leaving them where they were later found. You know, I started to wonder about this case, Captain. The Rooster bag, it being so unique.
Yeah. Unique New York.
Was this a mistake by the killer? Because we talk so many times that criminals always make a mistake. If you can identify the mistake made by the criminal, you have a lead to try to track down and identify who that criminal is.
Right.
Was that a mistake by the criminal, or is there a chance that this could be some form of misdirection?
When it's hard to categorize this killer, because on one hand, you're hearing that these cuts are made with precision. So to me, that would seem like an organized individual, organized killer. But then when you find these bags, when they find the bags of dismembered body parts and there's a foot sticking out, you start going, well, that doesn't seem so organized. But then you go, well, maybe they were startled. Maybe the bag came undone later, but it really makes it hard to even start identifying the characteristics of this killer. It makes you wonder too, when they bring up the thought of possible hate crimes, my mind always goes to the idea of, is it possible that he was seeing somebody that wasn't openly gay and had some reservations about being openly gay, and that would that be a motive?
Or, as with any affair,
right,
someone that would need to conceal this relationship from one person or many persons.
Very good point.
Now, I do want to apologize in advance, because I went to local news clips and I've heard this young woman's name said multiple ways. So right. I'm making a choice of how to say and pronounce her name here. So I mean no disrespect at all. This is just the way I'm choosing to say her name amongst the three or four different versions I've heard. I'm going to jump to another case here, Captain, because we need to talk about a young woman. Her name is Sharabia Thomas. She's 17 years old when she disappears in 2004. Now, remember, Rashawn went missing in 2005, found a few days later. Sharabia's sister, Rachel, is the person believed to have last seen her. This is on February 11, 2004. So this is 1 year and 3 days prior to Rashawn going missing.
Yeah.
Rachel and her sister, they both attend the same school. They're leaving to go to that same school at the same time. And at some point, I don't know if they part ways or But what happens is this is the last time her sister Rachel sees Sharabia. They are attending classes at EBC Bushwick High School. What we do know is Sharabia never arrives at school that day.
Red flag.
Now, she's found relatively quickly.
Right.
Unfortunately, she's found at 4 p.m. that very same day. Her naked body was found tucked into two laundry bags found in an alleyway behind 130 Palmetto Street in Bushwick. Sharabia died from strangulation, but she also had suffered blunt force trauma to the head, face, and torso, and she had visible ligature marks on her wrist and ankles. Male DNA taken from her body linked to no one at the time, but keep in mind, they have it on file. Police had no suspects, and this case, just like Rashawn's, stalled as well. Now, we jump into the phone booth at the Circle K, and we travel and fast forward to June of 2016.
Excellent.
This is when New York City cold case investigators were working on the unsolved murder of a student. Her name is Chanel Petro Nixon. She was 16 years old. She vanished in 2006 after leaving her family's home to go to an interview at a local Applebee's restaurant. Where was the Applebee's? This is not too far from where Rashawn would later be found in the bags. Chanel was found 4 days later after she disappeared, half nude, strangled in trash bags on Kingston Avenue in Crown Heights, Brooklyn.
So let me just get this clear. I mean, we have one victim found in two laundry bags. Was there dismemberment in the 2004 case?
No, I don't believe so. No indication of that.
Right. Now, was there dismemberment found in this 2006 case?
No, I don't believe so. The thing here is, keep in mind, note the locations of... Right. Where we're finding, and not just where we're finding these victims, but also where the victims are from.
Right.
Now, in 2016, a former classmate and fellow church congregation member of Chanel's named Vernon Primus was arrested and charged in her case. Primus had been imprisoned in St. Vincent in the Caribbean Islands and charges of kidnapping and murdering two other women. So two completely different women. We don't need to name them here because they don't have anything to do with Rashawn's case.
Right.
Now, he had served time previously in New York for assaulting another woman. Now, for obvious reasons, detectives would suspect that this guy who's responsible for Chanel's case could be a good suspect for Sharabia's case as well.
Right. Similar victim, similar area.
Yeah. And found... And murdered about 2 years apart.
Yeah, it's almost identical crimes, different times.
So they're like, cool, we probably got our guy. We have an idea. Let's build a case around this Vernon Primus guy who's horrible. We believe he's killed three different women, two in the Caribbean Islands, one here in New York, possibly another one here in New York, the Sharabia case that's unsolved. So they go and they're getting the scrapings from under Sharabia's fingernails. Those are tested by the NYPD's cold case squad using updated DNA technology. Remember, they tested DNA, male DNA that was found on her body back when her body was found in 2004.
Right.
We fast forward 12 years later. Technology has gotten better. So what will that new technology tell us? Well, from the scrapings, the lab technician obtained male DNA profile that was then entered to CODIS, the national DNA database maintained by the FBI. They get a hit. All right. So you spin the wheel, ding, ding, ding. You think you have something, you get a hit. You do got something, but it's not to this Vernon Primus piece of shit guy.
Piece of shit number one.
You get a hit to a Kwehuru Gavon,
AKA piece of shit number two.
Yeah, this man had been convicted of armed robbery, this taking place in Central Florida in 2014. So as a result of that arrest in Florida, he is required by Florida law to submit DNA sample to the database. It was his DNA that triggered the CODIS hit to Sarabia's killer. So in short, that DNA evidence is connecting you to this guy, Kwehuru Gavon. So when that CODIS hit happened in 2016, Gavon was already in prison in Florida. He's serving out that 3-year sentence for the armed robbery. We love when these pieces of shit are already in prison, don't we? It makes it very easy to go and find them.
Makes it a lot easier to find these pieces of shit.
But the NY investigators discovered that he was going to be released very, very soon. He was near the end of his sentence.
Not a good thing.
So they fly down to Florida, and they immediately place him under arrest for the murder of Sarabia Thomas. This is as he's stepping out of the facility. Like, you guys go ahead and let him out.
Yeah,
let him.
You're free.
Let him walk out. And as soon as he gets outside of that gate, that fence, boom, got him.
Got him. Say it with us.
Got him. He denied.
Sure.
The murder. In fact, he says he has no clue who Sarabia was or is, but you ain't taking this guy for his word. So you transport him back to New York to face charges for that murder. He's charged with murder in November 2016. It's second degree murder charges and first degree kidnapping. The physical evidence that Gavon had killed Sarabia obtained from biological material under her fingernails was strong. But police also learned that at the time Sarabia was killed, Gavon lived 2 blocks from her family's home.
Yeah, because I think when you start looking into this case, one of the things that you start questioning is, this guy's in Florida. Where's the connection? And so then when you find out, well, he lived 2 blocks away.
At the time of the arrest, this guy had a rap sheet 19 arrests long. More arrests than Merle Haggard. So 19 arrests long.
Don't throw Merle into this.
He had 17 arrests, I believe, by the time he was like 21.
Right.
This guy's rap sheet goes back to 1996. Some of these were for burglary and weapons possessions, but police believe that he had far more serious crimes on his resume that they just were unaware of. So now that they had this Gavon on the cold case murder of the young Brooklyn teen from the early 2000s and investigating Gavon, this led Detective Jason Palomaro to notice something, that Gavon lived for several years at 1104 Gates Avenue. Why is this important? This is directly across the street from Rashawn Brazil.
Yeah, and also what's interesting is when law enforcement starts asking around about this guy, I mean, the neighbors are saying, hey, he was the local weirdo.
Local weirdo, and let's take it a step further. Gavon knew, they could prove that Gavon knew Rashawn Brazel's mother,
yes,
Rashawn's brother, the whole family. He knew all of them, and yeah, he knew them well.
But what's interesting is he's telling law enforcement, I don't know them, never heard of them.
Exactly. Meanwhile, they're hearing otherwise from several other people that are saying, not only did we know him well, Rashawn had been to this man's home. His brother had been to his home, along with other friends of Rashawn's. And Gavon actually referred to Rashawn to many people as his cousin. So one report says their cousins were cousins.
Right.
So this shows exactly how close they were linked. They're linked by closeness and proximity, but also some very extended family relationship here.
Well, and didn't he also attend the funeral?
Yes. Yeah, and we know that because he signed the guest book when he was there. Yeah, we have witnesses to say he was there, and he signed the guest book.
But think about this. If you're law enforcement, you're asking this guy, did you know Rashawn? No, I didn't know him. Oh, actually, you're connected. You're somewhat family members with him, and he didn't know him. You went to his funeral. You signed the guest book. You didn't know him. He's a piece of shit.
So detectives are going to dive into Kahuru Gavon's background, all aspects of his life, his friendships, his social circles. They learn that Gavon's neighbors, as the captain pointed out, that he's kind of the local weirdo. Neighbors telling police, look, we're freaked out. This guy freaks us out on occasion. He's got these huge pet snakes, which even when we don't want to see them, he openly walks around outside with a massive pet python around his neck.
Yeah, he was known as like Snake Man.
Well, and he would wear these contact lenses that would give him the appearance of having snake eyes, snake-like eyes.
And look, man, I'm all for people being weird. I mean, I'm super weird. You're super weird. But it's a different thing when you're purposely being weird to try to freak people out.
The captain and I went full Marilyn Manson in high school. Not true.
They used to call us Marilyn and Trent.
That's right. But again, this guy's got a lengthy record. So being weird or being strange doesn't have anything to do with it, frankly. But this guy's got a rap sheet.
Right.
Beyond the snake eyes and the giant pet python snake carrying around, making people uncomfortable. These people were also telling police, like, this guy's also known for these giant mood swings. You know, yeah. Can be a super nice guy one minute and then can be violent the next. In fact, there was reports of him pulling a gun on at least two occasions on individuals. And some people telling the police that this was a guy that seemed to like to have like it's not about being kind of freaky and different and fun.
Right.
For him, the freakiness was about like kind of scaring people being afraid of him. And that people were saying there were people on the block that were afraid of this dude, number one. And number two, he seemed to like to have this kind of power over people.
Right. And again, that to me, wanting power over people, that to me, that would be a sign of serial killer. Somebody that would want to, because when you hear about these killers, it's not so much of it is about controlling somebody or feeling powerful over individuals. And if they have issues with women, that they kill women, so they feel powerful over women. It's not a good sign if somebody goes, oh man, I carry around my python and I feel so powerful. Everybody's so afraid of me.
Well, and then you get strange statements to authorities too. So when he is first confronted by the authorities, he claims to be schizophrenic and he puts his head in his hands and says, oh no, I hope it didn't happen again. This is according to authorities right. When they're confronting him about this. So you're looking at him. He's charged with the Rashabia case. You're looking at him for Rashawn's case. Detectives speak with Gavon's ex-wife. According to some reports, not all, because there's varying accounts of this, but according to some reports out there, it states that she told police that she gifted him a rooster tool bag. Very much like the one found with Rashawn's blood in it. Now, of course, there's going to be conflicting statements and inconsistencies in the statements that he gives to detectives regarding Rashawn's case. He told them that he and Rashawn were not close at all, that he barely knew him, which, according to everybody else in their statements, would seem that that's a lie.
False.
He also said he was out of town when Rashawn was killed and thereafter, but detectives had documented evidence that Gavon had attended the funeral. So that too, another lie. Gavon also said that he was a Jehovah's Witness and that he found the homosexuality of his neighbor Rashawn to be, quote, an abomination, end quote.
Yeah, but that to me goes towards motive.
Ding, red flag.
Yeah. Got him.
In February of 2017, NYPD detectives Evelyn Gutierrez and Jason Palomar arrested 38-year-old Gavon at Rikers Island for Rashawn's murder. Remember, he's there because of the Rashabia case.
Right.
At a news conference announcing this arrest, that they said that not only are we looking at him for Rashawn's case, we are looking into Gavon for more murders. They were reviewing cases both in his home state of New York and in other cases in other states, this including Florida and the state of California. The detective at this conference, news conference, acknowledged that there was, quote, a great possibility that Gavon could be a serial killer. Now, Gavon lived in California before moving to Florida, where he was arrested for that armed robbery. There is reportedly a particular case in the Golden State that he is being considered as a suspect for. The police saying at this news conference, we've charged him with two murders. There may be more. One of these cases, Captain, was a John Doe whose torso was found in a transfer station dumpster. The dumpster was located at 128 Gates Avenue in Greenpoint. And when it was picked up for collection, the remains were found. This was on July 26, 2005, just 5 months after Rashawn's body was found. And this is in Gavon's neighborhood.
Right.
In this case, unfortunately, the victim remains unidentified to this day. He's simply a John Doe. And a large part of that is the victim's hands and teeth were removed. The best that they can come up with is that the victim is male, black, age 17 to 25. Another possible victim is a female who was found 2 years later in 2007. Gavon was living in the area where this female victim was found. Detective Palomalo told us unequivocally that they firmly believe that Gavon was responsible for additional murders. And who knows how many of his victims he has, especially if we're talking about the dismemberment.
Right.
How many of these victims have been, for lack of a better term, dumped, disposed of? And in this one case, if this John Doe is his victim, we could have victims that are still remain unidentified, hindering the case.
And the more evidence that law enforcement gets against this guy, I mean, his defense now is just, look, somebody's setting me up for all these crimes.
And this, Captain, is where we get these guys that we can't stand. They're horrible. They're evil. They're terrible, bad guys.
Can't stand you.
Can't stand you. But then on top of that, super annoying. Okay, so Gavon, he's not cooperative at the arraignment.
Piece of shit.
Where he was to be indicted. And this is from these are not my words. These are from a 2017 Daily News article. It says, quote, Gavon has been a person of interest in Brazil's case for 6 months. He was brought to court from Rikers Island to be charged with the teen's death. The 38-year-old suspect was literally dragged into the courtroom. They had to drag him in against his will because he would not walk in there willingly.
Right.
Had to drag him in by approximately a dozen NYPD detectives and court officers. Meanwhile, while he's being dragged in, he's yelling to the camera crews that he has been framed, he's being framed. And according to the New York Times, Gavon shouted that he was being railroaded, saying, quote, is this what America has come to? Is this what President Trump would allow? And he's gesturing, he's pointing to his shackles. He told the judge that the officers had assaulted him, saying, quote, to assault me and punch me in my face, I don't think President Trump would allow this. And he says, wow, I don't think you'll be sitting on the bench for very long, to the judge. He yelled, they're framing me. I can't even dissect a frog. It was almost the perfect crime. Everyone was distracted, their attention elsewhere. Stacks of cold, hard cash sitting on the table unguarded. Who wouldn't be tempted to slowly reach their hand out and steal a pile of Monopoly money from the banker? Monopoly is one of those games that can bring out everyone's most devious selves. And Monopoly Go takes that gleeful mischievousness to your phone in a wildly popular twist on the classic game that you can play throughout your day, anywhere, anytime. Collect rent from friends on iconic properties. Bankrupt them by pulling a heist on their vault. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with friends to unlock big prizes and try to top the leaderboards. Whether you're helping out your friends or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is an absolute blast. Download it now free on the App Store or Google Play. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How is your social battery right now? Mine's feeling a little drained. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapist at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/garage today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/garage. Have you ever thought about why your wireless bill is so damn expensive? It's all just radio waves. And how much can radio waves really cost? It seems like big wireless all got together and decided $100 a month. Now, thanks to Mint Mobile, you have a choice. For a limited time, all phone plans from Mint Mobile are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans, jaw-dropping monthly bills, and unexpected overages. All plans come with unlimited talk and text, plus high-speed data delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. So ditch overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get premium wireless for just $15 a month. I love Mint Mobile. They have great quality. They have wonderful service. I love saving money. Put them together and I'm getting great quality, great service, a wonderful phone plan for only $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/TCG. That's mintmobile.com/TCG. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/TCG. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Get your snakes out and walk around. Cheers to you. Cheers to you, Colonel.
Cheers to you, Captain. Cheers to all the people in the back.
And all the cheers people, to the people with the snakes.
Snuck in yeah. The back. You know, you leave those doors unlocked and people just keep sneaking into the back.
We still love you the same.
Look, there's a lot of very aggravating parts to this case. There's a lot of very aggravating information here that we've had to go through.
But this guy deserves to die and burn in hell.
Yeah. Once you get to this guy, this is just where, like, I'm borderline on the edge of losing control. Like, you know how much I hate to resort to street justice or prison justice whenever possible. But this is where I just say, you know what? Throw everything I believe in, throw all the morals out the window, and let's just take care of this dude. Because let's go to the continuance. There was an arraignment because he's putting on the show. There's a continuance of the arraignment. This takes place in March. Gavon turned to Rashawn's mother. Like, so he's standing up there. He's supposed to be facing the judge. And he says his claim is he had nothing to do with this, barely even knew who Rashawn was. And yet this is on record. He turns to Rashawn's mother, Desire, and it's reported that he mouthed the words, "You know I love you."
It's bizarre.
When I found this portion of the story, it just left me speechless. Now, thankfully, in August of 2018, a jury found Gavon guilty of murdering Sharabia Thomas. The trial, as you can imagine, was a sensational one. But the DNA evidence from under Sharabia's nails was presented, as well as the prosecutorial theory that Gavon had abducted Sharabia to test out a sex contraption that he had invented.
Yeah, but I like what her sister said. You picked the wrong person because her sister was a fighter. She put up a fight and she was able to collect a DNA sample and they were able to match that to you, and you'll spend the rest of your pathetic life being a pathetic nobody behind bars, and you're going to get what's coming to you.
Well, and so what happens here, Captain, is they found plans. So they're found in his possession at the time of his arrest. Plans for this, of what he intended to do, but also this contraption that he invented. It's described as a chair-like device with moving parts that he calls a sex pod, or the sex pod, in his journal. Prosecutors showed crude drawings of the sex pod and said that it could account for the restraint marks that were found on Sharabia's wrists and ankles.
Right.
At the sentencing hearing, he's found guilty. At the sentencing hearing, he doesn't even bother to beg for forgiveness. He doesn't show any sign of respect or expression toward Sharabia's family. He did beg for mercy from the judge, saying that he had suffered his own losses in life, saying, quote, "I have lost my family as well, my grandfather, my uncle, even my cousin. I, too, am a victim of murder. I am not the culprit." Now, the pisser here, Captain, is, could the cousin he's talking about be, is he referring to Rashawn?
Right.
Which is completely crazy because at the time of this statement, he's facing charges for Rashawn's murder. So Gavon is sent away for 30 years. Good. He's off of the streets. Now he's awaiting trial on Rashawn Brazell's case. The DA is starting to put together their case against him for the other murder.
Right.
In 2019, there was news about the case. Let's go back to that very unique Rooster Brand tool bag. Well, according to a Gay City News article in August of 2019, the prosecution planned to introduce testimony from Gavon's ex-wife that she had given him a bag like the Rooster tool bag found near Rashawn's body parts. The bag had Rashawn's blood in it. So it seems like this would be where you have all this evidence. This is the pass, the assist, and the slam dunk on your case. But Gavon's defense planned to introduce evidence that the bag actually belonged to Rashawn. So needless to say, this is going to, if you can convince a jury of this, this will present a major obstacle to the state's case.
Yeah, most definitely.
Because without the evidence of the bag, it looks like they're going to have a hard time linking him directly to Rashawn's murder. If the bag belonged to Rashawn, anyone could have used it for the disposal purposes.
Right.
Then there was like shocking news in May of 2023, shocking to everyone who knew and loved Rashawn. The DA, the district attorney, Eric Gonzalez, dropped the charges against Gavon. This was on the night before jury selection was to commence. Needless to say, the family's devastated. His mother, Desire, was devastated and angry. She told Pix 11, "The way I took it, if it wasn't guaranteed win, then they didn't want to do it." So what she's saying is she believes that at some point their case became weak.
Right.
And even though the grand jury said, yes, charge this guy, yes, take him to trial, at some point the DA and their team may not have believed that their case was so strong. And because this guy is already going to go to prison and be in prison for many, many years, hopefully decades, that we don't want to risk the loss. You know what I mean? It's the, You don't want to play the pickup game of basketball because you're risking the loss rather than fight it out and get the win. She would prefer that they go and risk it and fight it out and try to get the win.
Yeah, risk the biscuit and get the win. But if you can, you have this piece of shit behind bars, maybe you can get a confession out of him later. Maybe they can build a stronger case against him. Maybe they can build, look, we don't know what law enforcement knows. We don't know how many cases that they're eventually going to try to convict this individual of. And even though it's no justice for the family, I feel like there will be justice in the end. And a person like this, this DA is not sleeping well at night, knowing he will have to put together a case at some point. So this guy never gets out of prison.
Yeah. And the thing is, you have all of the smart people in the room who investigated this guy telling you, not only do we think he killed two people, great, you got him on the one. We think he's a serial killer, and he's killed other people and potentially other people in other states.
Right.
So now if they can't build a case against him in Rashawn's case, you have to sit and hope and pray that they can in other cases. And what I'm hoping and praying for is that the possibility of taking him to court for Rashawn's case is not completely out of the realm of possibility. But it appears that there's no movement on this. So to kind of fill in some of the blanks here, you really have two sides of the table. You have Rashawn's family who's saying, yes, push this case forward, DA. And you have the police, Detective Palomar, who tells us, look, I was the one that arrested him. We arrested him for good reason. We had strong evidence in this case, he believes, from a detective police standpoint. And he thinks that the case should be pushed forward. And then on top of that, what would back that up is you presented this to a grand jury. The grand jury said, yes, charge this guy, take him to trial for this murder. So that's 12 people that don't have a dog in the fight to say there's something here. It gets a little dicey, though, because Gavon's defense team are going to try to introduce evidence that would suggest that he could not be the killer because he was out of the state, that he was in St. Louis at the time that Rashawn was killed. We touched on this a little bit earlier. We talked about him being at the funeral. We talked about him signing the guest book at the funeral and being seen by many people, talking, having interactions with people at Rashawn's funeral services. So that's not in dispute. But what's in dispute is, was he in Brooklyn at the time that this young man was killed? Because there is some evidence that suggests he could have been in St. Louis. He was supposed to be attending a truck driving school.
Yeah, for a job.
Yeah. So it's a truck driving school in St. Louis that same week. And so he's saying, look, this is my alibi. Now, the problem is, according to Gay City News and their good reporting on this case, they're saying the problem here is it's limited records. So they were able to verify that, yes, in fact, Gavon was enrolled in the program. And he is, in fact, credited with a significant number of hours that week. But those same records do not conclusively indicate and do not definitively place Gavon in St. Louis at the time of Brazell's murder.
And like you stated earlier, our time window is a lot bigger than we would want the time window to be.
Exactly. And the thing here is really what that's going to, if you do go to court, it really just makes the whole prosecution much more complex in explaining this whole timeline for the murder and how the defendant is 100% involved, right? Like you have to, would he have been able to travel from St. Louis to Brooklyn to commit the murder? And then we have that extended period of time, 63 or so hours that Rashawn is missing. and believed to have been held captive. Now, it does seem like they were able to deduce the following, that someone using Gavon's name signed the registry or sign-in sheet at the truck driving school. So if that is fact, if they can prove that is fact, this guy's got no alibi at all, as far as I can see.
Right.
So what did the DA office have on Gavon linking him to Rashawn's murder in the first place? Well, we know for a fact that they had established a connection between the Rooster tool bag and Gavon. It was similar to the one used by Gavon's wife at her job. This is according to at least one report that we saw. Detective Palomara will say only that the bag has been linked to someone in Gavon's family and that there is a, quote, very close connection, end quote, between the MTA and Gavon's family.
Right.
But the bag in the police property room, unfortunately, this is the punch in the face that we get week after week. It's the reminder that, you know who gets lucky in these cases? It's the freaking killer. The killer's the one that gets lucky. This bag that was the nucleus of their investigation, sitting securely in the police property room, is contaminated beyond all means in Superstorm Sandy, because that property room got flooded during Hurricane Sandy.
Yeah, because one of the things I was going to say in this case, if I'm law enforcement, I'm retesting the evidence to try to see if I can get his DNA on any of the evidence that we recovered.
It looks to me, if it walks like a duck, if it quacks like a duck, it's probably a duck. And we've reviewed a lot of these monsters. This guy looks like complete monster to me.
Yeah.
How many of these guys have we reviewed that they're writing and drawing up plans and journals? He's doing just that. He invented this contraption to...
It's fantasizing.
Yeah. To lock a person up and do things to them. He's going to great, gross, horrible, horrifying ways to dispose of victims. And there's evidence to suggest that he's killed multiple people. Some cases stronger than others, but evidence to suggest that he's killed multiple people.
And that's all we can really hope for, is that they get a really strong case against him and this guy never sees the light of day. But like I said, he deserves to die and burn in hell.
Well, and we got to give mad credit to Rashawn's mother, Desire, who kept this case alive. Remember, this was a cold case for a long time.
Yeah.
Before they finally got a break. And unfortunately, you get the worst kind of break that you can imagine in a case. It's another murder, another victim. But kudos to Desire. She did everything that John Walsh told us to do in the early 80s. Keep your son, keep your daughter's case in the media. Keep it alive. Keep the story alive. That's how these things get solved. That's how we find suspects. In conclusion, the drop charges, of course, were shocking, startling to Rashawn's family, who had been somewhat strung along by promises from the Brooklyn's DA's office that they would do whatever it took to nail Gavon. Desire told Pix 11, quote, "I feel like I failed my son. I fought. I fought as hard as I could, but it hurts because of the way he was murdered. They're saying to me, we got a conviction on another case. Be happy, Mrs. Brazell. He's never going to get out." But of course, that's not going to be enough for the family. That's not going to be enough for Desire.
No.
She believed and still believes that a jury should have gotten this case. And so did Detective Palomara. He said in a public statement, quote, "The perpetrator in this case, who was not unfamiliar with taking a life, was identified and the evidence was presented to the Brooklyn DA's office, who found to be sufficient to present to a grand jury." and an indictment was returned and a preparation for trial began, end quote. So both retired Detective Palomar and Rashawn's family feel strongly that a severe injustice has been served here. The detective tells us that the current DA's office has essentially closed the book on this case, and he does not anticipate that charges will be brought again against Gavon for Rashawn's murder, absent of a confession or revolutionary new evidence, or maybe even a new district attorney. Palomaro tells us that Desire's 18 years long efforts are the reason that this case is still being discussed. She organized marches. She circulated flyers. She petitioned America's Most Wanted and consistently demanded the attention of investigators. She even insisted on approving the detectives staffing her son's case. Of course, she is grateful that Gavon is off of the streets and cannot hurt anyone else, but she does not have all of her son back. And she does not have anyone being held accountable for his murder, even though everyone knows who did it. And that is the definition of injustice.
You could be anywhere, but you're here. Thanks for listening. Thanks for telling a friend. Colonel, do we have any recommended reading for the beautiful listeners?
Thank you, Captain. Our recommendation for this week is Living Blue by authors Dr. Barbara Rubble and Jason Palomara. Author Jason Palomara, who we consulted with for our case coverage this week, is a retired cold case homicide detective, and his book, Living Blue, is a life-changing book that offers a deeper understanding of the impact that vicarious trauma has on law enforcement officers and their family members. This evidence-based guide, rooted in cutting-edge technology and personal life experience, focuses on managing symptoms of chronic stress, compassion fatigue, moral injury, and secondary trauma. You can find this very important book and powerful book on Amazon and at jasonpalomara.org.
And you can find all of our recommended reading on our recommended page at truecrimegarage.com. And until next week,
be good, be kind, and don't litter.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.